When I was in distress, I sought the Lord. At night, I stretched out untiring hands, and I would not be comforted. I remembered you, God, and I groaned. I meditated, and my spirit grew faint. You kept my eyes from closing. I was too troubled to speak. I thought about the former days, the years of long ago. I remembered my songs in the night. My heart meditated, and my spirit asked, "Will the Lord reject forever? Will he never show his favor again? Has his unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has he in anger withheld his compassion?" Then I thought, "To this I will appeal, the years when the Most High stretched out his right hand. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your miracles of long ago. I will consider all your works and meditate on your mighty deeds." Your ways, God, are holy. What God is as great as our God? You are the God who performs miracles. You display your power among the peoples. With your mighty arm, you redeemed your people, the descendants of Jacob and Joseph. The waters saw you, God, the waters saw you and writhed. The very depths were convulsed. The clouds poured down water. The heavens resounded with thunder. Your arrows flashed back and forth. Your thunder was heard in the whirlwind. Your lightning lit up the world. The earth trembled and quaked. Your path led through the sea, your way through the mighty waters, though your footprints were not seen. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron.
I'm wondering how many times you've felt like the psalmist, where you're feeling crushed by the experiences you find yourself in during the week or a certain day. You start to wonder and start to question, where is God? Has he forgotten? But one of the things the psalmist gets to is this idea that I can continue to see the pain and the sorrow that surrounds me. And I'm allowed to question God, has he forgotten me? But one of the things the psalmist comes to towards the end is remembering what God has done. Why is it important, do you think, for the psalmist to remember what God has done when he's in the midst of feeling crushed? What would you say? Yeah, to try to gain some hope when there's hopelessness. Dan. God has the power and he will act in his way, in his time. We just have to wait. Oh, isn't that the hardest part of it, though? Because God has an overarching plan. From the beginning of time, God had a plan. When we fell short, humanity fell short, and we pointed a finger at God of why things are so bad, and he says, but I've got a way. Be patient. And in that patience, what he calls us to be is trust-filled. And that's the hard part for us. Because when we're in pain, the thing we want the most is what? Relief. And we know God could give us relief in a moment. And when he doesn't give us relief in a moment, we wonder why not? Because that would make us happy. But we have to remember God is not ultimately concerned about our happiness, but our holiness. And holiness means thinking about ourselves in the world in a way that he sees ourselves in the world. That this idea of feeling crushed is a common feeling. But one of the things we have to remember is the mighty deeds of God. Now, last week we talked about the Passover. We talked about how the people of Israel were feeling oppressed because the Egyptians just were continuously hounding them to do more work for them. They were no longer free. And they cry out to God and God hears them. And they were feeling more and more crushed. And God appears and he shows by his mighty hand that he has power over the one who is oppressing them. And in the end, he delivers them from their oppression by the offering of this lamb with the blood on the door that says, these are my people. And they feed on this lamb and they're ready to leave. And Pharaoh says, get out of here. I don't want to see the sight of you anymore. And how great that feeling must have been to finally realize we are able to escape. We are able to get out from underneath this oppression. We can now live our life our way. But isn't it interesting? As soon as someone is freed from oppression, now they have to make a way. They have to start living their life in a way outside of that oppressive force. And we compared that to Jesus on the night that he was betrayed. Where before he's betrayed, what is he doing with his disciples? He's teaching. They're participating in Passover. They're feeding themselves on this representative meal of God's deliverance from oppression. And then within this meal, he tells them, this breaks the bread. This is my body that has been broken for you. Eat it. And we talked about how in John chapter 6, where he tells the people, if you want to be my disciples, you must eat my flesh. And they're going, cannibalism is not part of God's will. Obviously, you're not the one God sent. And he tells them, you must drink my blood. And they said, but you don't drink blood, especially human blood. Who do you think you are? And many people left, but Jesus knows, as the Passover lamb that he represents, they need to feed on him as the Israelites did hundreds of years earlier. For their freedom, he was the source of their redemption and their reconciliation to God, because they have wandered away and by their own choices had been oppressed because of missing the mark of what God is calling to. We talked about last week about this idea of being bent, that when we start doing it our way rather than God's way, we get bent and distorted in ways that are no longer human. The way God wants us to walk, upright and straight. But we choose our way, and it's a crooked path most often, to satisfy self in the moment because we just want to be happy. And oftentimes we don't think about needing to be holy. And when Jesus comes down, he takes upon himself that role of not only a sheep, but a shepherd. He's the good shepherd, he says. I know my sheep know me. Just as my Father knows me and I know the Father, and I laid down my life for the sheep. Isn't it interesting that it's the shepherd who's going to offer his life for the sake of the ones who oftentimes are the source of sacrifice? And he's not just raising up a flock in order to send them off to temple to have their blood poured out and their blood be the representation for these humans who continue to choose a crooked way. Where he says, I'm going to step in for your sake. He is the lamb. He is the good shepherd. And he says, I have other sheep from another pen. They'll listen to my voice. They'll be part of my flock. The reason is that my Father loves me, that I lay down my life. And this wasn't something he was forced to do. This is something he chose to do for you, for me. Oftentimes when we think we have to do the right thing the right way, we can look at others and say, well, if it weren't for you, I wouldn't have to. But Jesus says, because of you, because of your value to me, because of you, I want to. And isn't that what we celebrate? That this God was willing to send his Son, and his Son was willing to die for our sin. He says, no one takes it away from me. I lay it down on my own accord. I have authority to lay it down. I have the authority to take it up again. This is the command I received from my Father. So it wasn't that he came down here reluctantly. He came down to us willingly. But isn't it interesting, though, that even though he has this Passover meal with his family, it's not over, is it? Same way with the people. Once they leave Egypt and they're freed from the oppression, it's not over, is it? Jesus says in Luke, he says, I came to this point to bring fire to the world. I wish it were kindled and burning. He's trying to bring a change. He's trying to burn off that which needs to be cleansed. He says, and there is a kind of a baptism that I must suffer through. And I'm very troubled until it's finished. It's interesting how in the 1 John it talks about how Jesus came by water and the blood. And this baptism of water, this baptism of blood are two ends of a ministry of Jesus for the sake of a people who have chosen a crooked way. Who turn their back on a God who says, I love you and care for you. Just follow me. And Jesus says, I'm willing. But it's not easy, is it? He says, I'm very troubled. And we think it's, oh, he just kind of skips through life and he goes to the cross and he goes through Gethsemane. He knows what's going to happen. It's not hard for him. Then why on earth is he praying in the garden and sweat is coming off his brow that's filled with blood? He's in agony. Why is he praying three times? God, if there's any way for this to be taken away, take it away from me. It's because he's in agony. But he wants to be. And what does he have to do? It's the same as the psalmist. He has to remember the mighty works of God. As I lay my life down, I know, God, I can lift it back up because you will give me the power to do it. So on this journey, Jesus isn't going to shirk his duty. And he calls us to follow. And on the journey of the Israelites, as they're leaving Egypt, he says, I'm going to take you to a land filled with milk and honey. Well, that's pretty attractive because the land we come from was far from that. So let's go. Let's get on our way. Let's not waste any more time. And as they're traveling along, God doesn't take them straight up through Palestine because he's afraid that if they meet an army, then it'll be over. So he takes them in a different way. And I would wonder how many of the people who might have known how to get to this land would say, this isn't the way. God, the way is that way. And you're taking us this way. I don't think you know what you're doing. All the time, God is saying, I know exactly what I'm doing because I know you. And you will get to a point when you see fear, you'll try to do it yourself rather than trust in me. So he takes them in a longer route. And they have to trust this route. And they get to a point when they're wandering around and Pharaoh says, oh, look at those idiot Israelites. I hear that they're wandering around. They're lost. Let's go get them back. I want to make things like it used to be. Isn't that our natural way of thinking? We create a world, we create a life that works out best for us, we think. And we don't like change because change means I have to adapt. And why would I want to do that? I like it the way it is. And Pharaoh says, I liked it the way it was. And all his leaders say, bring those people back. We're losing our workforce. So they ride out to take this people back. And the Israelites are finding themselves hemmed in along the sea. And could you imagine what these people are thinking? They're probably on one hand going, yes, we're free. We're free. Isn't this great? And then somebody turns around and all of a sudden they see a big cloud of dust behind them rising up. I wonder what that is. Oh, it's just a dust storm. I'm not so sure. I hear something with that that doesn't sound right. I hear the pounding of hooves. This isn't right. And as they get closer, they see, oh, no, it's Egypt. They're coming to kill us. And what are we going to do? The sea is here where there's no place to go. We're not an army. They are. We're going to die. Moses, weren't there enough graves in Egypt? Why did you have to bring us out here? Do you see what they did in their fear? They went quickly from celebrating the release of God. And when they were confused about what the future held, they turned to blame. Isn't that what we do when we're scared? Isn't that what we do when we're not sure what the future holds? When things are falling apart, we want to know who's at fault. We want to fill in the gaps instead of waiting and trusting. And what does Moses do? He does the same thing like before when they were in Israel, because they said the same thing. They're oppressing us even more now that you're here, Moses. God, you sent me to these people. Why aren't they listening? God, this is your fault. Going back to the garden. What have you done? Oh, we ate the fruit. You know, God, this woman you put here with me. It's your fault. And the woman says, the serpent. It's the serpent's fault. So isn't that the natural reaction to not take responsibility for what we think, what we do, but to find a reason outside of ourselves rather than admitting and moving ahead and trusting that God will make a way in the midst of all those things? And God says, I am going to prove to you people, you will know I'm God. And don't you remember, there's something that's going along with these people. There was a cloud, a pillar during the day that was leading them. And at night, it became a great nightlight so that they weren't afraid. Because have you ever been out in a wilderness that you don't know what's going on and you can only see maybe beyond your hand? It is scary. I don't want to go out there. There's animals out there. I might die out there. And God says, trust me. So he's leading the way, giving them light on a path. And when this army comes and they're afraid and they're shaming and blaming and pointing fingers, God moves around, gets in between the Egyptians and the Israelites, and they stop. And at night it says there was light for the Israelites, but there was darkness for the Egyptians. How that worked, I have no clue, but I wish I was there to see it. And then we sit here, you know, nonchalantly, you know, sitting in our pews thinking, oh, silly Israelites, how could they be so foolish not to trust God and to question him when his presence was there? And it wasn't just a pillar of fire and a pillar of cloud. There was an angel with them. All these manifestations of God. How silly for them not to trust. If I were there, I would have been secure and I would have said, nee, 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 here we are. You can't get us. And we're going, I don't think that would be the way it would happen. Because I'm just like them. Even though they knew when our feelings rise up and our fears take over, the things we know easily go right out the door. And we start acting out of our fear, out of our emotion, rather than trusting out of our knowledge that this is a God who has demonstrated mighty power, who has redeemed us, got us to where we are, and he can get us further. But they did not believe that. They thought they were dead. And as Moses is crying out to God, he says, get going. Where? Across the water. Now, you know, in water in much of Scripture is a chaotic world, right? It's the unknown place. The world before God separated the waters from the land, it was in chaos, and he makes meaning and purpose out of chaos. And here he's saying, go through the chaos. And we're in the midst of the chaos. He says, yes, but watch, raise your hand. He raises his hand and the chaos splits. And all of a sudden there is a separation again between land and water. And the place for those who live on the land can journey through the chaos to freedom. God makes a way. And they go across. And as they make it to the other side and the Egyptians are following, God takes away the wind. And he says, I will show you my last victory over your oppressors. And they're on the other side. Free again. No longer in fear anymore. God made a way. And he saved me again today. And Jesus, you think about Jesus and how when he is in heaven and God the Father says, I need you to go down and reclaim those people. He could have gone into blame like most of us do. And I like this thinking of Brené Brown talks about blame. Blame is the discharging of discomfort, anger, and pain. That's why you blame. It's not about being accountable for my actions, or it's not about talking to someone and asking them and holding them accountable to their actions. It's just about discharging my frustration wherever it goes. It's corrosive in relationship. And it hinders empathy. It hinders me from understanding who you are and what you're doing. When I blame God, I'm telling him who he should be. I'm not empathetic to understand what it means to be someone who is a parent looking at a child saying, yeah, I think I know what's the best way for this child, and I'm trying to accomplish that, but they keep resisting, and I know how it can be frustrating. Oh, maybe God feels that way about me too. Maybe I need to start trusting him like I want my child to trust me because I can see the bigger picture. So when we blame, we're going into the fleshly part of us, not the part of us that God says, you're made in my image. Because when Jesus is on the cross, he's not sitting there saying, God, it's all their fault. Strike them dead. But on the cross, he looks at these people who he has come to reconcile to the Father. And he says, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. He could blame us for his cross. He could blame us for all his pain. And when you think about people throughout Scripture who could have done the same thing, think of Mary and Joseph being told, you're going to bear the Son of God who's going to redeem the world. Yeah, Mary could have said, but don't you realize what people are going to think about me? They're going to think that I'm a woman of the streets. And Joseph, what are they going to think of me, God? They're going to think I couldn't control myself before we were married and that I just... got her pregnant. What are they going to think of me, God? But what they had to do was to trust that this way that God had called them to was going to be the right way, even though to everybody else it looked like the wrong way. And were they going to get blamed? Were they going to get shamed? You bet. But they, like in the psalm, had to go back and trust God in it. We think about Jesus and his miracles, and he going back to the water theme again. What does he do at the first miracle? The people's backs are against the wall and they have no wine, and he takes water and makes it into wine. What about Jesus when he tells the disciples to go and I'll meet you? And he goes to pray and he comes to them in the middle of the night just walking on the water. Like it's no big deal. And all of a sudden, these guys are rowing and they see something. They're going, what? It's a ghost. You know, it's not a ghost. It's me walking on the water. And Peter says, Lord, tell me to come to you. Wouldn't that be great? Would you be like Peter? Would you have enough faith to be like Peter? Or what we might say, the foolishness to be like Peter? I mean, just, well, it looks cool. I'm not even going to think about what this all means. He says, tell me to come to you. Didn't he trust that he needs to tell me if I can do this? I'm not just going to do it on my own. Ha-ha! Because that's what we do when we choose a crooked path. He says, come to me. And he takes a step over the side. And I'm wondering if the rest of them are going, this is amazing. And they're watching, what's going to happen? And Peter wondering, what's going to happen? Because Peter's been on boats before. He's been in the water before. And he starts to walk on the water. Something he could not do if it were not for the one whose presence he was in. And as soon as he took his eyes off that presence and started to look at the winds and the waves, he took his eyes off Christ in the things of this world, the chaos of the waters around him caused him to sink. This is what happened to us time and time again. We look around our lives and there's chaos and we're wondering, how am I going to walk across this? It seems like it's overwhelming me. We take our eyes off the Redeemer. He says, come to me, follow me. Or when they're in the boat, and the storms are raging and they think they're going to die and Jesus is sleeping. Don't you care? He says, oh, you have little faith. He looks to the winds and the waves and the chaos. He says, be quiet. And it gets still and they go, oh, no. Who is this guy? And if it were me on the boat, I would want some distance from this guy who has so much power. And they get to the other side and I would imagine they're like, oh, land, kissing the ground. All of a sudden they hear out of a distance someone screaming out of the tombs. And they're going, let's get back in the boat. Or let's get behind the guy that can calm the storms. And what does he do? He calms the storm in that possessed person. Isn't that amazing? That when there's chaos all around, there is one who can calm the storm. And when Jesus was in the middle of his own chaos, when he's praying in the garden, he says, Father, take it away. Father, take it away. Take it away. But as in the psalmist, he goes back to, but not my will, but yours be done. I know the way that you've called me for the redemption of this people is going to lead to my great suffering. But Father, give me the strength to suffer for them so they don't have to. So Jesus is the Lamb. Jesus is the way. He's the light. He's our hope. And he destroys the enemy. And he shows us a way. The people of Israel, Paul reminds the people in Corinth. He says, brothers and sisters, I want you to know what happened with our ancestors who were with Moses. They were all under the cloud. They were all walking through the sea. They were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. This beginning of this journey with God as their father, God as their leader. And Paul writes, did you forget that all of us had become a part of Christ when we were baptized? In our baptism, we've shared in his death so that we who are baptized were buried with Christ. We took part in his death. And just as Christ was raised from death by the wonderful power of the Father, so we now have a new life. We have a new way of looking. And at the end of the Exodus story, when they passed through the waters, it said they put their hope in Moses. They put their hope in God. And as we go through our own waters of baptism, coming out the other side, we're proclaiming our faith in the one who redeems us. Casting Crowns wrote a song. The words are this. Who am I? I'm sure you've heard this before. I've played it before. Who am I that the Lord of all the earth would care to know my name? Who would care to feel my hurt? Who am I that the bright and morning star would choose to light the way for my ever wandering heart? Who am I that the eyes that see my sin would look at me with love and watch me rise again? Who am I that the voice that calmed the sea would call out through the rain and calm the storm in me? Who am I? Not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. not because of what I've done, but because of who you are. I'm like a flower quickly fading. I'm here today, gone tomorrow. I'm a wave tossed in the ocean, a vapor in the wind. Still, you hear me when I'm calling. Lord, you catch me when I'm falling, and you've told me who I am. I'm yours. Do you struggle with who you are? You have no reason to struggle anymore. If you're his, you're his forevermore. Let these words sink.
Who am I that the Lord of all the earth would care to know my name, would care to feel my hurt? Who am I that the bright and morning star would choose to light the way for my ever wandering heart? Because of who I am, but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but because of who you are. I am a flower quickly fading, here today and gone tomorrow. A wave tossed in the ocean, a vapor in the Lord, you catch me when I'm falling, and you've told me who I am.
I am.
I'm yours. I'm yours. Who am I that the eyes that see my sin would look on me with love and watch me rise again? Who am I that the voice that calmed the sea would call out through the rain and calm the storm in me? Not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but because of who you are. A flower quickly fading, here today and gone tomorrow. A wave tossed in the ocean, a vapor in the wind. Still you hear me when I'm calling. Lord, you catch me when I'm falling, and you told me who I am. I am yours.
I am
a flower quickly fading, here today and gone tomorrow. A wave tossed in the ocean, a vapor in the wind. Still you hear me when I'm calling. Lord, you catch me when I'm falling, and you told me who I am. I am yours.
So Jesus tells us that he is the light, he is the way, he is the way back, and he reconciles us in a new relationship with God and with one another. So the challenge that we have, if we're going to follow that way, if we're going to allow him to lead, we got to follow as he led. We're told, if it's up to you, live at peace with everyone. We're not blamers, we're reconcilers. We're not people who want to create distance. We're people who want to cause closeness, because that's what Jesus has done by coming to this earth. We're people who will turn the cheek, people who will allow God to light our way, even when it's difficult, because God sent his Son to create community. And he creates community through us when we reconcile with one another as we're reconciled with the Father. He is our way. And I know it's hard. But if we trust our way, we will blame. We trust his way, we will live as his light. If you need the prayers of the church, find out how to be a part of this way. Whatever your need might be, come find me afterwards and set up a time and talk. But this God who cares about your soul, who cares about your destiny, has sent his son to die for you. Give your life for him. Let's stand and give God praise.